Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, and happy, happy Friday to you all. It is your host with the most, and the only person good enough to welcome you to the F4L headquarters, or the one that should really welcome you, and that's me, the icon and leader of the F4L, the icon, Sean Jazz Stevens. And good evening, good morning, last evening, ladies and gentlemen. So we got some words out there. We may have some people coming in a little bit, perhaps some, you know, people we haven't chatted with in a little bit and whatnot. Catch up with some F4Ls around the world and see what's up with people. So momentarily, they could be calling in at any moment, so we'll wait to hear from that. We got a lot of stuff to go over today. First of all, you know, it's Friday, so what better way to, you know, start the weekend off, but, you know, to do this. So here we are. So, yeah, with that. Anywho, so it's going to be fun. You know, hard to say what's going to happen. It's always unexpected, I guess you'd say. So we're here. So first of all, you guys remember, we usually put up our YouTube shows on the 14th. Which was yesterday. Due to some technical issues, we weren't able to get them all up yesterday. So just want to let you know, all of those matches will be up today. And by the end of today, everyone will know all of the exciting action and all the results from our show on YouTube to see who's champions and such and so forth. A lot of big matches on that card. But we got a lot going over here today. So it should be fun. Got the caffeine going. Hopefully, you know, we have some fun today on the show. Last show was a little bit of a downer, I think, for a lot of people. It was for me anyway. But I think this show could be a little bit different, you know, depending on what happens and whatnot. So, yeah, I sit here now and it's Friday. Like I said, it's not the greatest weather out there, it looks like. I don't go out unless I have to, and I don't have to go out today. So I'm here to devote my time today with you guys, the F4L around the world. So it should be interesting. So let's see. What can we chat about first? Where to begin? Well, first of all, you know, remember we're going to be doing Talking Tuesday on Tuesday. That's coming up, and we're going to be bringing that back as of this Tuesday, where we're going to have like an open grilling session and free for all. Anybody can call in and whatnot, and so forth. Also, want to let our friend Michael Fishman know. Last night, I took part in his live stream on Instagram, as I've been doing religiously now since forever, because he's, you know, a really cool individual. Not only is he, you know, in the creative arts like myself, but also, you know, he's been around the block a few times. I think he has a lot to offer, not only in filmmaking, but in life in general. And we're happy to have him as part of the F4L. Lives the F4L way, even though, you know, he just found out what the F4L was until recently. It's funny how people live the F4L way without actually knowing what the name of it is. It's interesting stuff. So Michael Fishman was doing last night, and I'd asked him, you know, who should be next to join the roster for Dream Masters or the Women Warriors of Wrestling, seeing how we have himself, Michael Fishman, and his co-star Ames McNamara. The question was, well, who else can I add? We also have John Goodman on the roster as well. And he had suggested Sarah Gilbert, who plays his sister, Darlene, on the Conners, you know, or Roseanne. I think that's an interesting prospect because I think that would be very interesting, especially since she's both a brother. She plays his sister in the show and the mother of Ames TV in the Conners. And it's interesting that she would be the tie that kind of binds the two. I think that would be a very interesting concept. Could that be a faction in the plant making? Could it be that Darlene will be the leader of the Conners? Interesting stuff. Plus, you know, growing up watching the Conners and Roseanne and stuff like that, she was a very kind of a, you know, I have to say that I always found Darlene probably one of the most entertaining people on the show because of her sarcasm, which is something that is huge in our family anyway, in our house. So it was cool to have Darlene. So I made her last night, and she'll be making her debut probably on the 24th, which is our next scheduled show. Again, the show for the 14th has already been booked. It's already set. It's already getting ready to be put up. It's just a matter of the timing and allotting and stuff like that. But the 24th will be coming up, and we have all kinds of exciting action to go. So fun stuff. So I've been reading, catching up on The Walking Dead, the graphic novel again. Again, I read the graphic novel way back, you know, a little bit. I finished the entire series. And of course, I was a huge, you know, follower of the show itself. I thought the show was really cool. And, you know, I thought it was kind of cool that, you know, some parts are fun, some parts are not. Sorry, my machine is fighting with me, the blog talk thing. not listening to me. Interesting stuff. It's a learning process, folks, a learning process. you would think that the blog talk thing would know that I was online right now, and I'm on the air, and it's telling me that I'm late to my show, which I was actually wicked early for, which is exciting. Always good to be early. Let's see. But anyway, like I was saying, I was catching up on the graphic novel. It's interesting how quickly things can change and how things can be adapted from both page form to live action TV form. I'm wondering, you know, at first I thought maybe they were changing things up just because there were certain things they can get away with in the graphic novels they probably definitely couldn't do in the TV series. And some things were adapted like that. However, that doesn't take away from the graphic and the goriness and the, you know, all that stuff, because that's definitely a thing as well. So, you know, a lot of things, there are some things that are different. Now, a lot of people who watch the show, who read the graphic novel, you know, kind of gave up on the show a long time ago because of how quickly it went off from the show, off the graphic novel. By for example, killing off key characters who in the graphic novel, you know, either didn't pass away or whatever. I guess, you know, they could do spoilers here, but I mean, all honesty, the things I'm talking about, you know, with as far as The Walking Dead goes, for the most part, because I mean, I haven't watched any of the season 10 yet. I didn't even know season 10 started, but I also am told that this is their final season. On AMC, the Walking Dead. So, you know, ending the other, I guess, of that. But, I mean, it would be interesting to see, you know, kind of how that works out and how it plays out, to see how it kind of wraps up since it went so far off of the graphic novel. And I'm interested to see kind of where it's going to end in the show. Because in the graphic, again, I mean, the way it ends in the graphic novel cannot happen in this universe that they've created on the TV series, since the people who are involved at the end are no longer even a reliable source, since they're not in the show anymore. They took Carl off in a few seasons ago. Rick's gone a couple seasons after that, maybe a season after that. You know, when you take away characters like Rick and Carl Grimes, who are kind of what the show is kind of, the graphic novel is kind of based upon, but you put more emphasis on these TV characters like Daryl and so forth. Now, I think they do a good job mixing the two by allowing them to do that, right? They allow them to kind of mix the old with the new. I believe, like the graphic novel, I guess Michonne's not been seen. She left. And if you guys read the graphic novel, you kind of have an idea where she went. But you also probably know, I mean, theoretically, how she will be back. Theoretically, I mean, it goes by the graphic novel. That doesn't mean they have to do that, but they very well could. But, I mean, they do definitely put a lot of emphasis on characters like Daryl, who was created for the show. There is no Daryl Dixon or Merle Dixon in the graphic novel. And this show is, you know, evolved into focusing on him and so forth. And, you know, they portray Negan a little bit in the show. I don't really know what's going on. Again, I haven't seen any of the season 10 yet. But I know this is their final season. So those of you guys who watch The Walking Dead or have watched The Walking Dead, I think it's important to kind of give yourself that closure that you probably should have. Because win, lose, or draw, it's the end of an era. It's the end of history. It's something that not everyone can actually appreciate and take a part of. So that's kind of how that works, you know. So now, what happens, you know, in different forms and whatever. So anywho, I've been reading back in the graphic novels, kind of looking at different things, and maybe a little bit later I'm going to kind of look at those differences and we'll evaluate, you know, what's cool and, you know, what do we work with and whatnot. I have an interesting guest possibly coming in today. Who knows who's going to show up, but it'd be interesting. It's cool. So, and if no one calls in, that's fine too, because I can just sit here and I can. Yep. So there you have that. So, yes, that's interesting stuff. People letting you know that they're maybe late or whatnot, waiting for breaks to call in and whatnot, which is cool. That's a cool thing. Anywho. So what does everyone else do on Fridays? I mean, things right now, I'm sure that's changed a little bit for some people. Some people, depending on what your age is and whatnot, can it can range from anything from wrapping up. Well, right now is 1:43. So most people, if you're a teenager or someone who is young, then you would be probably wrapping up your school day. Unless you have a half day or something like that, which you would be already wrapped up and probably on your way home. If you're an older person, if you're, you know, an adult or whatnot who works 9 to 5, you're probably busy in the middle of your heated work day. If you're working from home, like yours truly, then that's what you're doing at home. Probably similar to what I'm doing now. Working and, you know, keeping on track of things. I don't have the television on right now, by the way. I shut it off. I don't need it on. And I don't need any distractions or whatever. And I also, I actually haven't watched network television in quite some time, or any kind of television really, because, you know, just too much negativity and too much of this, you know, stuff. I already know what I need to do to keep myself and my family safe. And I keep on track of the news on that. It's not like I don't know what's going on. I do. I just choose not to, you know, give it any kind of press or airtime in my space, in my life. Because it owns the life of everyone else. So I'm all set. Anywho. Yeah. So, all right. So there's various different streaming services. So depending on what people have for streaming services, some people have the Hulu, some people have Netflix, some people have Shudder, some people have, Hulu, Netflix. Let's take those, and then you get the Disney Plus, then you get the Hulu, you got the ESPN Network. There's so many streaming platforms now. So when I say, you know, I don't watch network television, it's not necessarily true. I do watch television and television shows. I just choose not to watch them on live television. One, I'm not overly fond of commercials. And two, I get busy usually, and it's hard to try to fit in whatever the time is for whatever show I'm really high in on. But it's much more easier and convenient to me if I'm able to, you know, catch up on that episode later on some other platform, which fortunately I can. You know, I wanted to give a little thing here. I'm not being, this is obviously not an endorsement or anything, but I'm going to say I have a Hulu package that, number one, it there's no ads. And two, it also includes Disney Plus and ESPN Network. But also, you know, you can, with that, you can also sign into, you know, other services like HBO Max, which is what I did. HBO Max by itself, I think, is $14. And that's, you know, whatever. But that's tied into my Hulu. My Hulu is actually not expensive considering it includes Disney Plus and ESPN Plus. Now, although, you know, I do enjoy sports and I'll watch them when I can, I don't think anyone in the family watches any of the ESPN Plus. But, you know, that doesn't mean anything else. So, there's that. But with my package, I get, you know, the Disney Plus, the Hulu, and I have, you know, all the those channels and then some. But I also, because I have the Disney, I have the HBO Max with through the Hulu, I also have HBO Max. So with that, I have also other things too. I'm able to catch up on South Park that I fell off of, and several other shows that are on, you know, HBO Max, which I'm just kind of tiptoeing around. I have the Disney Plus. My wife and my kids utilize it more than I do. But, I mean, it's not like I'm, you know, this macho guy who doesn't go on the Disney Plus. I'm not going to tell you that either. I have gone on there. For nostalgia purposes alone, I mean, I think if you're a parent or whatever, and also someone who has some type of creativity, who's not, you know, afraid to show that you're, you know, not afraid to be young, youthful, and look at things at a young eyes, that, I mean, I have no problem going back to watch old Disney movies and shows or whatever. I have not watched The Mandalorian. A lot of people tell me I'm supposed to watch that. I haven't. Sorry, people. And I don't know why, but because, I mean, I do like Star Wars. It's not like I don't like that. But here's the other thing. I haven't watched any of the three new Star Wars movies. I know I'm really falling behind. I watched all of the original three. I watched the new three that were prequels to the old three. But I have not watched any of the three films that came out prior, right after Revenge of the Sith. I haven't watched any of the, it was Rogue One and the Last Jedi or whatever else the other one was. So I don't know if I need that to watch The Mandalorian, but even still, my wife, who's doing this thing where she's trying out a new show on Sundays, she watched The Mandalorian. She wasn't overly impressed, but she's also not, you know, heavy into Star Wars either. I'm someone who enjoys Star Wars quite a bit. I mean, I've been part of very interesting, you know, geekish, well, geekish, I don't know. I don't call it geekish. I think it's a cool little way to talk about, you know, something that everyone has this a general love and passion for, which is Star Wars. I mean, I can pretty much have a conversation about pretty much whatever as far as that goes, movies, television, whatever. But when it came to Star Wars, people, I remember being part of a conversation, we've got really, really deep into it. You know, this is prior to any of the three movies coming out, the original prequels. So that was interesting to be part of that. And I was working at a video store. I find that the most times you hear people who are debating about films or whatever usually will be around something to do with movies or and type of entertainment thing, a video store or a movie theater type of thing. But, yeah. So I haven't watched that, and my wife did, and she wasn't overly impressed with it. And, yeah, frankly, I'm not ready for that yet. I have talked about already. I've watched Cobra Kai. I still recommend that. That's actually pretty good because I think it does a good job keeping the nostalgia piece together, and I also think it also does a pretty decent job with original storylines and going places where you don't expect it to. And, you know, it's a pretty, you know, intricate show. you know, and I have not gone into Stranger Things. I can't do that. I'm sorry, people. I've tried. Now, to be fair, I've actually tried to watch Stranger Things. I've actually sat there a couple of times to watch, you know, I always do. I start the first episode of any show, and if I like it, you know, that I continue. If I don't like it, you know, or I'm not sure about it, I'll watch the next episode, and then I'll basically have my idea if I'm going to like it or not. And Stranger Things, I don't know what it was about the first episode, but it didn't grasp my I didn't enjoy that. I don't know why. I like horror stuff. You know, most people know I like the coming of age stuff. A big fan of like the Stand By Me type movies and the Goonies types of things. And that's basically what this reminds me of. But for some reason, it has a fantastic cast and a great working crew and a great, you know, people working on the show. It's just, I can't get into the Stranger Things. Maybe if someone could tell me why. yeah, but you know, there's a lot of other things that are out there, and there's a lot of other cool things. Now, I wanted to talk about a couple movies I watched on Shudder. Shudder, I got my wife for her birthday. I know, I'm the cool husband who got his wife the horror movie subscription. But she likes the horror movies, so it's not like, you know, whatever else. You know, if you want to get some, you know, watch some old school horror stuff, or you want to, you know, really go in on the horror stuff, I think Shudder is probably what you want as a horror fan to be a streamer for a streaming platform. I don't really think you need even the other platforms if you're a horror fan. I think Shudder should have plenty of content for any horror lover. They have everything from, you know, they have the new Creepshow TV series. They have the old Joe Bob Briggs, you know, drive-throughs for the TV stuff. But then they also have, like, the old creature feature, double feature stuff we grew on with, like, you know, Godzilla and all those sudden things. But in addition to that, you also have, like, you know, all these cult classic horror films from all eras and everywhere. I often find, you know, foreign horror films are sometimes done a little bit better. I don't know why that is. They just are. And I watched two movies the other day. I didn't even realize how long they were. I thought they were pretty short. And, you know, we're so used to these days watching a movie that's like a 2-hour runtime. These movies were about an hour and a half or an hour and 15 minutes each. These are older movies now. I watched the film, The Pit, which was set, had it somewhere in the 70s. And I realized how the old dialogue drives me nuts in film. I mean, and it's not even, it's just, I don't know. I want to pick on people's acting style. It just seems like whenever they're doing this, oh, golly gee, in a horror flick, that is going to show guts and gore, but you're doing, oh, golly gee, I feel like it doesn't fit in any age range or any genre or any, you know, era. I feel like, you know, certain things are just, you know, you can't avoid, and certain dialogue you would use back then that you would still use now. So anyway, The Pit was what I watched. You know, it's funny. If you guys remember another cult classic, but the movie The Gate. The Gate was about this kind of backyard world where this it was this like underground type of thing, and the gate had like was supposedly opened up to the pits of hell and brought people in there. It was in the, you know, focused on this kid who was being tormented by, you know, the gate, right? And The Pit kind of reminded me of that. Now, it was way older than The Gate. The Gate, I think, came out in the 80s, I want to say. But The Pit was definitely done probably sometime around the 70s, I want to say. I really should have fact-checked this stuff before I came in here with you guys, and I apologize. I haven't yet. But I just feel that – Okay, so I'm going to subtract that. So the Pit was made in 1981. Yes, I fact-checked that, guys. That's what I do. So the Pit came out in 1981. It is rated R. And the cast of people, who you probably never heard of, you had Sam Snyders, who played Jamie, who is the protagonist. He's like the star of the movie. And then, of course, it had Jeannie Ellis, who played Sandy O'Reilly. And then I think everyone else is kind of like a secondary type of thing. Basically, the premise of this movie, I'm not going to look it up because that's cheap. That's even worse. I know that this came in the area of of 1981 and how cheesy the dialogue was. That's kind of upsetting to me. But basically, the movie was this. This kid's getting bullied and tormented. Anyone who gives this kid a hard time, who clearly has some type of psychological malfunction or a psychological illness where he is listening to a supposed teddy bear that he has that is telling him to do these horrendous thing, kind of like voices in the head type of thing. And he decides he's going to, you know, bring he stumbles across this pit in the backyard or in the woods that has these little troll like things that eat people, apparently. And what he does is he basically lures the people who pick on him whom he chooses to feed to these so-called beings. And then, you know, I don't know what exactly he gets out of it, except for he gets rid of the people he doesn't like. But yeah, that's kind of the premise of The Pit. He brings these people into the woods for various reasons. The action scenes are really bad. And also the believability is really terrible too. I mean, if you're standing across from someone, you see a large hole in the middle between you, yourself and the other person. Why would you continue to walk forward knowing there's a giant hole between you? There was just continuity things that I had problems with that because that didn't make a lot of sense. Like, you know, if you're walking into someone, you see someone, you stop before you jump on them like a lot of these people seem to do. But you clearly miss the giant hole that's right there behind. Like the hole is probably a good, 7-8 feet, both ways. And then there's this, like I said, it's a pit. So we don't know how deep it is, but these creatures are on the bottom of this so-called pit. But I wasn't overly fond of the pit. Like I said, the continuity wise and the dialogue was, I mean, now that I even look at 1981, I feel bad because I thought it was back in the 70s or the 50s. Cause that was what the feeling that you got from it was. It was not dialogue that you would see in movies from the 80s, in my opinion. Now, I had mentioned The Gate. I did not watch The Gate, but I'm just going to, just for shits and giggles, I'm looking up The Gate since, I'm going to do this. I'm going to read you the description for The Pit, and then I'm going to read you the description of The Gate, and you tell me how far off it is and what's different about it. And this is The Pit. Left with his babysitter, Jeannie Ellis, a bad boy, Sammy Snyders, that's the kid, who plays... that's the one we're talking about. With a teddy bear, finds a pit with four hungry monsters. And he feeds these hungry monsters, these people who torment him, basically. People he doesn't like and blah, blah, blah. It was made in Canada. Even more fun. Okay, cool. In 1981, I can't believe that was made in 81. It was directed by Lou Lehman. Interesting. All right, so that's The Pit. Now, there's a cult classic movie called The Gate, which was also in the 80s, I believe, The Gate, which I'm curious how far off that is from this, because I feel like definitely stuff was borrowed. So this is the synopsis for The Gate. The Gate is a 1987 supernatural horror film directed by Tiber Teclis, and starring Stephen Dorff. Wow, that's old school. Stephen Dorff in his film debut. The film follows two young boys who accidentally release a horde of demons from their backyard through a large hole in the ground. Apparently there's a Holes 2. I mean, a Gate 2. I didn't even know there was a Gate 2. That came out in 1990. Four teenagers are thrust into a battle against the forces of darkness after they conjure up a wish-granting demon. I think it's safe to say, however, that... Okay, granted, there's two in one film and whatnot, but we definitely have the demon element. We have the hole in the back and, you know, you're feeding these things to it or whatever. And that right there tells me that there's some definitely borrowed stuff there, even though the gate is not overly fantastic either, but at least, you know, it does have dialogue that's realistic. I can give it that. The premise is the same, however. There's still a pit in the back somewhere that has these things in it that people feed and eat and blah, blah, blah. So I think this is a very interesting thing. Could the gate have taken the pit and made it into two separate movies? Because it sounds like a combination of the two, where you have, you know, the demons who are granting wishes, and I'm sure, you know, in order to get the wishes, you have to feed the demon, I'm guessing. I didn't see it, for the record. I'll check it out, though. I'll let you guys know if that's really that much interest. But, yeah, I watched those. Interesting stuff. Yeah. What else? Yeah, but that's some interesting stuff. We'll check more about that a little bit later, I guess, maybe. So, you guys probably knew this, maybe, who are reading comic books currently. But Batman apparently has finally married Catwoman in the DC realm. I haven't read Batman I'll be honest with you guys. You guys probably already know this. I think I've mentioned on my other podcasts. But you see, here's the thing. I know that Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, Captain America, Wonder Woman, and all, I know a lot of people love these characters. I know they're great. And I mean, everyone loves Batman. He's got all the gadgets and the gizmos. Awesome. And he's, you know, the Dark Knight, blah, blah, blah. And everyone loves Superman. He has every power that one wants to try to convince to invisibility, to shoot lasers out of his eyes, to be fast than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a motive, blah, blah, blah. Depending on women, battles it out and whatever on that end. But I'm not trying to downplay those characters. I know they're iconic superheroes, but for me personally, I always feel like I am more rooting for the characters who never get a lot of love or, you know, respect until they come out with a movie about it. And then everyone decides that's when that character gets some love and some appreciation when they're featured in a film or a TV show. And then when they change certain things about those characters in order for them to fit better on TV or film, then it doesn't maybe transcribe so much to the comic book lovers as it does for the people who are watching it for the movie. I mean, I've been, you know, pretty much vocal about my likes and dislikes about superhero movies in general. I know a lot of people love the Marvel universe and they're excited about the Marvel, whatever they're calling it, the MCU, I think they've even titled it. But like, I mean, if you're going to give everyone in Marvel their own movie, I mean, where does it stop? I mean, you could say that that's a great money-making thing if you're going to make a movie based upon every single Marvel character. But to me, it seems like they're, you know, just rehashing a lot of the ones we already know about or we think we know about and just put in different ways. Like, Spider-Man from Marvel is something that I don't understand why we needed three attempts to do this film. You don't need that. I know that DC has the same issue with Batman. Why is there so many? Why do we need all that many? Superman, you know, granted, the only reason we can't, there are a few people who played Superman, but how many people actually, who do we view as Superman? Who is the Man of Steel? Everyone always, you know, latches on to the person who makes that character important to them for that reason. Like, a lot of people who like the, you know, presentation of the Dark Knight will view Christian Bale as the Dark Knight, as Batman. People who grew up in the 50s and the 60s who are familiar with the TV series when Batman was around for the comic books are probably going to say that Adam West is the original Batman and is the Batman. People who can't, who were around in the 90s when Michael Keaton took the cape and cowl, they're going to say he was the real Batman. Most people, because it's easy to say, will not say George Clooney because that was probably seen as one of the worst of the Batman series. But I think that goes with, you know, how you look at it. They made it campy, and I think if the more you do something, the more it makes it ridiculous. Now, do I view Ben Affleck as Batman? I have not. My wife is a huge Wonder Woman fan. I've said that multiple times, and that's cool. That she can love, you know, Batman, well, Wonder Woman, or whatever else. And I'm not going to be someone who's going to tell someone that their views on a certain character is more important than mine. I'm just telling you what my issues with these things are. My issues are when the comic books and the movies go way off the rails and make it, you know, insulting to the people who supported their comic book itself or the character itself. That's kind of where I kind of draw the line. Now, Ben Affleck, when I heard he was signed on to do Batman, I already rolled my eyes. I was already not happy because Ben Affleck's already attempted the superhero genre. In my opinion, destroyed Daredevil. That movie was probably, if we're going to rate, you know, superhero movies, 5, 1 to 5, and I was going to pick 5 movies, and the worst one would start it off, the Daredevil would probably be the first one on the list because Daredevil went way off from the comic book genre. Ben Affleck went that far to dye his hair red to fit the role as Daredevil. Well, that's great, except for the fact that in the comic book series, Matt Murdock, who plays Daredevil, who is his alternate whatever, is blonde. Kingpin, who is portrayed in the Daredevil movie. Now, I have no hard feelings to Michael Clark Duncan. I loved Michael Clark Duncan in certain roles or whatever. But when you're going to tell me that that's Kingpin, there's an issue there. Because Michael Clark Duncan, as talented as he is, in a lot of great roles, God rest his soul, but he wasn't Kingpin. Kingpin was a fat, overweight, kind of a muscle-headed, fat mob boss. And he was a huge white guy, and he was very racist at that as well, if you're reading the comic books. So what they did is they made it Michael Clark Duncan Kingpin and got rid of everything else that made Kingpin what he was. Michael Clark Duncan was in great shape, and he was an African-American guy. I'm not saying that, you know, nothing about that. I'm just saying the way the character was perceived and what the character was in the comics was completely shattered. I mean, when you get the starring person in the movie, like Ben Affleck, who dyes his hair red to fit the bill of a character who is actually blonde in the comic books, you already lost me. So when they said he was signing on to do Batman, I'm like, oh, that's horrible. But then, you know, more news would come, and now we're going to have Robert Pattinson. We're going to get good old Edward from, you know, the Twilight series on how to, you know, we have the Edward from the Twilight movie to, you know, come in to Batman now because, you know, that's what we need, another Batman. So it's crazy. 1 second, folks. I got people. I get some people who want to be coming on the show soon, so I'm going to be hopefully having a guest shortly. I'll wait to see who it is. Anywho, yeah, but there's so many various different elements that make a comic book movie good, in horror movies and so forth. If my friend actually does end up calling in, he's actually a huge horror fan, and I'm actually going to find out. We can get his point of view. Now, he's not someone who's made films per se, but he's a fan. But if my buddy Ed might be joining us, and if he does, he's a person I watch a lot of horror flicks with, and he's a fan. He has not necessarily made a horror film, but I know that he is a huge fan of it. We've had to sit through some pretty atrocious horror movies recently. But I also know he's into a lot of those types of things. So we'll have to hear from him what his perspective of horror films is if he chooses to call in. Of course, when we get Dave Hagen, the promoter of Monster Mania, on the air, he is a wealth of knowledge in the horror genre, seeing how he runs the number one horror convention in all of the world, in my opinion. That's in, of course, the Monster Mania Con, which we'll see them there in May. So hopefully, knock on wood, hope to see Dave and May and the rest of the Hagens. But also, I think what will be interesting is to see what will, you know, also, Dave has a book out, by the way. Just want to mention that real quick. I just finally finished his book. You guys can order it on the Monster Mania store page. Go check that out. Go support Dave Hagen. He's doing good stuff over there. Great work on the writing aspect of it as well. But, yeah, I know a few things about writing. Anyway, but, yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the comic book world. But it's going back to the whole Batman and, you know, Catwoman being a thing in the comic book series. I'm not overly fond of Batman anyway. I think it's overdone. Even in the movies, it's been overdone. They can't get one specific person. And I just think that's done. Why do we need several Spider-Mans, Supermans, Batmans? I mean, what's wrong with having a person do maybe three movies, moving on to the next character? There are plenty of awesome people in the MCU who people never even heard of. Here's an idea. What if they were to do what they do in the comic books and have like the verses in the Marvel Universe? Like, I think, you know, if they didn't, you know, destroy Hawkeye's character, I think Hawkeye and Deadpool would be a great crossover because Hawkeye in the comic book series is a very kind of a mouthy, kind of a sarcastic, joking kind of an individual of the Avengers. And as you guys know, Hawkeye is also one who doesn't have any powers or anything, but he's, you know, sharp as a whip when it comes to, you know, finding his target and being a technician with weapons and stuff. They made a series where Deadpool and Hawkeye faced off each other. And just the comic book, that series alone was funny just because of the dialogue between the two. And Deadpool is another one of those characters who a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon when the movie came out, thanks to Ryan Reynolds, which I'm not taking anything away. It was a great presentation of who Daredevil, or an idea of who, you know, Deadpool is. kind of gives people an idea of it, but not necessarily, you know what I mean? Not 100% with, you know, Deadpool in the comics versus the series. Because I mean, there's certain things you just probably couldn't do. Like Deadpool in the graphic novel, in the comic book series, he's his biggest critics are in his head. And that's kind of what makes it funny is where a lot of those one-liners he uses that in the movie he would say out loud to the fans, but to the people. But in the comic book series, he'll do that and break away and do the fourth wall thing. We'll talk to the reader, but also he'll have the voices in his head talking to him. And then he'll be talking to the person he's facing, you know, at the same time. Maybe people don't think that, you know, the audience can't keep up with what Deadpool is all about. I think that'll be I think if you're going to do something about someone, just give it to them who they are. The Punisher is as you guys know, is my favorite all-time comic book character and comic book series. And also the best version I've seen so far is the Thomas Jane version of the Punisher. Apparently people didn't like that. I don't know why. It was the closest thing to what we have from the Punisher. Punisher was a no-nonsense, kill or be kill, you know, my way or the highway, you know. And that's, he was a darker hero. He was the anti-villain. An anti-hero. He was an individual who got into fights with people like Daredevil and Spider-Man because he thought they were candy asses, part of my language, when it came to dealing with, you know, the villains and the crime in the city and stuff. Of course, in the movie with the Thomas Jane, they, you know, took a whole left turn with how that happened. You know, granted, his family was killed by a mob in the park, but, you know, the element's still there. In the movies, it was definitely still the same. His family was, you know, taken down. But, of course, comic book series, I don't think they really indulged upon anyone else in his family except for his wife and two girls at that time. But it's hard to say, really. You know, interesting to see how that would work. But Deadpool, you know, and him had a comic book series too, Deadpool versus the Punisher. They're the opposites of opposites. They have the same idea and the same kind of philosophy. Deadpool is, everything has a price. He'll do whatever it is if you pay him right. Doesn't really have a lot of morals as wrong, and he's not afraid of making fun of himself to do so. Punisher doesn't like making a fool of himself, very no nonsense, but also has no kind of remorse about the justice he gives out, like Deadpool. It's just that, you know, the Punisher is not going to give you a bunch of one-liners. He's going to knock you out, and then he'll, you know, do whatever he's going to do after that to get his punishment up. Well, he's the Punisher. Where Deadpool would, you know, make you laugh, and then he'd, you know, slice you and do whatever he's going to do to you in his, you know, Deadpool fashion. In the video game series that my son and I did with the show Dream Master, we made them a tag team, and actually they were really successful too, because opposites sometimes do attract. In that comic book series, with Deadpool and the Punisher faced off each other, it was probably one of the best performances by Deadpool and by the Punisher, because they were, you know, who they were all the way to the end. And, of course, Deadpool, who always makes it about, you know, making sure the wink to the camera, you know, this, we all know, he's even said this during all of these team-ups things. If you guys have read a lot of the later issues in the team-up, kind of all the Versus series, Deadpool made awareness to it by saying, you know, how, and he said it a few times now, where, oh, we all know how this is going to end anyway. There's going to be a misunderstanding. We're going to be going after the same guy. We're misunderstanding. We're going to fight for a few minutes. And then we're going to team up to take out some guy, and then we'll be friends again. Why don't we just cut to the chase and just agree that we did something wrong and move on? He said that in a couple of the newest series, and I was dying laughing because that's exactly true. And that was funny. Of course, the Punisher is not someone who likes to play jokes with and stuff. But, you know, as far as DC goes, I know everyone's excited about the Scott Snyder's taking over for DC, the Justice League and stuff. All right, cool. But there are a lot of people in the DC universe we haven't even seen yet who are better than all of the ones we've had already. Where's Martian Manhunter? Do we know who how many people know who Martian Manhunter is? Why isn't Martian Manhunter in anywhere in this? He's a huge part of the Justice League. And there's a lot of other people who are part of the Justice League we don't see. Hawkman, Hawkgirl, big parts of the Justice League. You don't see any of them. I don't understand why we have to have several versions of the same people over and over again. Is it possible that the reason why none of these adaptations are working is because people are just tired of it? Now, during the Batman versus Superman movie they made with Ben Affleck as Batman, I haven't watched the whole thing. My wife has had it on when she's watched for Wonder Woman, who does a cameo in it, I guess. But, and in the Justice League movie as well. But in general, like, why? Apparently, they had a scene where they fought Doomsday. This is what I had to watch, and I was mortified. Because I'd asked my wife, I said, who are they supposed to be facing? Oh, she says, that's Doomsday. I'm like, oh. And you know what? Maybe if Scott Snyder was taken over, maybe they need to just do that whole thing all over again. Because, no, that's not Doomsday. What made Doomsday dangerous to Superman, or what was the most, what made him so dangerous in general as a villain, was that he beat Doomsday. He beat Superman by doing something no one else has ever been able to do. He beat him to literally beat him down. There was no superpowers involved. There was no kryptonite anywhere to be found. He was not created by anyone for any purpose but himself to do whatever he wished. And he liked to create havoc and do and bring destruction. And that's what he did. There was no thought process. He just, you know, one movement, just go and destroy. If you guys read The Death of Superman, which I did, fun fact, I actually have a lot of the old series. Like, I have all of The Death of Superman. I have all of The Breaking of the Bat. And I have almost all of The Death of whoever it is who supposedly dies or comes back about a year or two later anyway. But when The Death of Superman happened, I'm not a huge fan of Superman either. I think he's another one who's overrated. Again, I'd much rather have a Martian Manhunter movie I would take a Martian Manhunter movie over a Superman movie any day of the week. I would also take a Hawkman and Hawkgirl movie over a Flash movie. Oh, don't give them any ideas. Whatnot. They tried the Green Lantern thing. Why haven't they done that? I know they're doing it. I don't know why they haven't done that already. I mean, Green Lantern's a huge part of the Justice League, too. They did that already, and then they had to scrap that since the guy that they brought in to be in the Green Lantern, you know, went to Marvel, became Deadpool. So there you go. That's how that takes place. Yeah. So, but you know, in the series, The Death of Superman, we followed Doomsday's destruction path to Metropolis, and what made it dangerous and what made it impactful is every time someone would hit Doomsday, he would know, you know, how to reverse that. That's what made Doomsday Doomsday. He would feed off the raw energy, the negativity, I should say, of whatever it is. And then he would learn, his body would adapt to whatever it was that, you know, was hurting. He took out almost the entire Justice League prior to even facing Superman, when he fought Superman. Now, when we talk about the Justice League, we're not talking about Superman. We're not talking about Wonder Woman, Batman, or Green Lantern, or Martian Manhunter. None of those people were involved. However, Supergirl was there, as well as Bloodwayne, Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, Guy Gardner, who is a member of the Green Lantern Corps. Guy Gardner, by the way, you want to have I think he'd be probably the closest thing you'd get to like a Deadpool in the Green Lantern Corps. He's a kind of a mouthy individual too. But Guy Gardner and a list of other Justice Leaguers were put down by Doomsday prior to him even facing Superman. And I say put down, he destroyed them all. Turned them into nothing. He destroyed every single one of them all together. They all took him on as one, and they all lost as one. And then that's when Superman came in, and they fought, and this fight went on. Doomsday couldn't fly or anything like that, and he wasn't like this giant. You know, granted, he was bigger than Superman and most of the Justice League, but he wasn't perceived in the comics as this giant like they perceived in this movie. They made him look like some type of like a cross between like a giant golem type thing, or like a, or like one of those, I don't know, it looked like a giant troll, to be honest with you, which Doomsday was not. A giant troll made of fire. That's what Doomsday looked like in the Justice League movie, or Batman, whatever one he was in. That was just, I didn't like it at all. And I've come to find out since that, I always wondered why they never made the Death of Superman movie. Because I would be interested in that and see how that works out. Even if it was the end where they would combine the entire, you know, saga into one. Like the Death of Superman had, you know, that series, but then also had the Funeral for a Friend, and it had, you know, The World Without and The New Beginning and then The Return of Superman. These were all series that came around the same time. Now, to be fair, I wasn't overly fond of Superman, but I collected all those because I knew what was happening there. And I knew it was history, I thought, I hoped, because I wasn't overly fond of Superman. And I also wanted it in order to show sometime later that, you know, this is how it really was supposed to be. Of course, we all knew, you know, that none of the four that came back to claim to be Superman was Superman, because at this point, remember, he was supposedly dead and whatnot. Now, you know, just, I hate when they just go off like that. They destroy Doomsday to make them better. Now, the Dark Knight, they had Bane. I definitely think the Bane we got in the Dark Knight was much better than the Bane we got in the, what was the one, Batman Forever with Poison Ivy, where Bane was a little Mexican wrestler. Oh, boy. Now, that was another one of my favorite series, but a lot of that, the movie took away from what Bane was also about. He was a strategic striking individual, where what he did prior to any of that, because he's on the juice, which is, you know, if anything, it's a PSA about drug abuse and steroids or whatever. But because that's basically what Bane was, you know, an individual who took endorsed, you know, venom, as he called it. And it made him, you know, more stronger than anything else. Now, when he, the way he broke the bat, when a lot of people say, well, breaking the bat was when he took Batman and broke his back, but that's not necessarily the case. Breaking the bat was, first he had to, it was a light out plan. First he had to, he released a lot of the people from the Arkham Asylum prior to them facing off one-on-one. So Batman was already tired from fighting all of these villains all over the place, these people who he's fought for years. He was already feeling his age, Bruce Wayne. He's feeling his age. He's feeling beaten down. And he's sore. He's tired. He's had to beat everyone, the Joker, the Riddler, and a cast of other people he had to send back to an asylum or whatever else. And then what made it creepy or dangerous was when Bane came to his house at Wayne Manor, and that is where he faced Bruce Wayne, because he found out where he was. And he came to Batman's house. He brought the fight to Bruce Wayne. And Bruce Wayne didn't have much chance to do anything. And Bane, he was already sore. He was already, you know, doubting that he could do anything. He was already tired when he fought Bane. And then Bane, all he had to do was pick up the pieces and just broke the bat. Paralyzed him. Putting him sidelines. And then, yeah, I had the series right after that, which was the Sword of Azrael became the new Batman. And didn't really know much about him until that series. And I thought he did a much better job as Batman. Batman in the series always annoyed me because he's supposed to be this vigilante. And he's supposed to be about revenge, but he also has a rule about not killing anyone. His parents were killed, and people have killed plenty of people he cared about, but he doesn't kill anybody. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying that I'm not, you know, condoning Batman's behavior or not, but, you know, I find it interesting that Batman has the morals not to kill someone, but has no problem dropping them off the top of a building or hitting them with these different objects or shooting with certain things. That's okay, but just I can't, you know, hurt them, kill them, you know. But, you know, Batman to me was just kind of a goody-goody that, you know, I think when what exposed him for being, you know, himself was when Bane just broke him after that. And then as the series went on, Bruce Wayne is now paralyzed after that. And then what happened, and I knew it wasn't going to be long, because Sword Azrael became the new Batman. And he first thing he did is he went after Bane, and he wanted to bring down Bane because Bane was already running amok. And Bane already at this point, everyone's envisioning is this unstoppable, you know, meanest, tough guy. Well, when Azrael got to him, he, you know, adapted certain things that Batman had in his arsenal and brought the fight to Bane and, you know, really did a number on him, almost killing Bane. He didn't. He almost did. The only reason he didn't is because it was Nightwing or Batman who, Bruce Wayne Batman and Robin, I want to say, or maybe Nightwing, who was former Robin, got involved and they, you know, stopped him from doing that because that wasn't the Batman way, whatever the nonsense was they used. So. Anywho, but now that was the thing. I didn't realize I could give it such a deep comic book descriptions. But, you know, in the movies, they haven't really indulged a lot of those, and that's cool. You know, it is what it is. Anywho, some entertainment news. You may or may not know. My family and I watched the movie The Heroics on Netflix. It was about this family of it's actually about these kids who are the offspring of superheroes. And actually, this is actually a continuation of the Sharkboy Lava Girl series movie franchise that, I mean, I remember some of that. That came in around, I was a little bit older when that came out, but I still remember them. I thought those were kind of cool back in the day. I knew when I was watching the movie that, you know, obviously the Shark Boy was not the Shark Boy. Shark Boy in the original Shark Boy and Lava Girl thing was at that point was someone that a lot of people didn't know yet. That was Tyler Lautner, who you guys probably wouldn't recognize without having a werewolf attached to him or whatever. But Taylor Lautner was the original Shark Boy. Apparently, they couldn't get him or didn't want him, one of the two. So they got some other person just keeps the mask on. I guess that works the same way, right? But I do believe it was the original Lava Girl who was still there. That was kind of cool. And of course, they're the parents of one of the new heroics in the making. And of course, all of these superheroes have children and they're all going to band together. And the underlying story of this is how the kids are able to work together, where the parents had egos that kind of threatened how they got along. And they would also be kind of, even though they were a team per se, they were seen as kind of a, they each seeing each other as getting in their way or whatever, where the kids put that away right away and they work as a team right away. I thought that was kind of cool. And, you know, the nostalgia piece, like I said, my son and I looked at each other when we watched and we said, yeah, that's going to be a part two. And then I said, yeah, watch. And a couple of weeks after the part two, we're going to get the TV series on Netflix with the kids growing up and the family and all that. And of course, I had reached out to a lot of people who worked on the film and I said they did a fantastic job and they did. It's a family film, I would say, but it was really well done. Worked well, the chemistry, the jokes were good. You could definitely see the, you know, the athleticism and the individuals involved. Nothing was, I mean, yeah, there's some silly elements to it, but there was definitely laughs that adults would get that kids probably wouldn't get those jokes and vice versa. So it was really cool on that aspect. But a fun fact is I come to find out, yes, they greenlit and they're going to be releasing a sequel to that, The Heroics 2 or whatever it's going to be called on Netflix. So that theory came true, me and my son both said. So now we're going to see if my ability to know something that works and when I see talent and whatnot works when they announce that it's going to be now a TV series on Netflix. Because I'll tell you, if they made that a TV series, you'd probably find me watching that more than you see me watching Stranger Things when it comes back. And again, I'm not knocking the people who work on Stranger Things. A lot of those people I have a lot of respect for. Some of those people worked with me back in their early days. But, you know, I can't, you know, talk about something I don't know, and I can't really review Stranger Things because I, you know, I haven't watched the whole episode. I can tell you I watched the clip of the kid who was singing the Neverending Story thing. I think everyone knows that from Stranger Things, but I think there's more to the story than, you know, just some dude who sings to his girlfriend on the phone during the most uncurious times. I thought that was amusing. Other than that, I can't do that stuff, man. I'm sorry. And that kid's actually really talented anyway. I think he's, you know, he needs more airtime anyway on that show from what I understand, but that's just me. What do I know? Except everything. Just kidding. So I got about 23 minutes left on this special edition of the TGIF4L Friday. I hope you guys have a great weekend. I don't know what you guys are planning on doing, but, you know, there's plenty of things on TV. There's been, like I just mentioned, a few things you guys can check out. If you go to Shudder, I don't suggest The Pit, but if you want something that, you know, definitely is, I don't think it's overly scary. I can tell you that. If you're someone who scares easy or you want a horror movie that isn't too scary, that's probably your type of tea. It's not very violent. It's not very gory. I found out it's rated R, probably because of language and suggestions. And the kid who plays, you know, the protagonist, he's kind of creepy, and he's basically hitting on his babysitter, which this kid's probably is like 13. They actually said he's like 13 or 14 years old, and he has a babysitter. I don't know. I just find that strange. I mean, maybe that's how things are for normal families. I know I didn't have a babysitter at 13 or 14 years old, seeing how I was out of the house when I was 14 or 15. So living on my own at 15. So I don't know what that's like to have a babysitter 2 years prior. But, you know, if you guys want something lighthearted, that's probably something you want to check out. It's not too scary. You can probably handle that. TV, if you want to go on Hulu, The Conners just came back. They had a very interesting – I think this is kind of iconic anyway. Candace Bergen, who played Murphy Brown on – well, Murphy Brown, Candace Bergen. She is actually, you know, did a cameo on the – was a guest star on the show. I thought that was interesting because – you talk about two of the most controversial shows back in that, and when Murphy Brown and both Roseanne were on TV. I think both individuals were probably the most controversial females of all time, whose both shows like to push the envelope more than, you know, people cared to. Both individuals like to challenge authority. I think Sarah Gilbert, who now works on The Conners, is another one of those individuals who's that guy, has that mindset to do that kind of thing. I think for me, it was nostalgic to see someone like Candace Cameron. Imagine Murphy Brown coming into the Conners house, basically. That's kind of how I see it. I think that's how a lot of people do. And just to see this iconic character on another iconic show is very interesting. I'm also going to say on the Conners, I also mark out whenever Katie Sagal's on there. Because I'm like, yep, there you go. You have to have the Bundys. If you want to talk about a messed up family, you get the messed up family, the Bundys, Katie Sagal, and then you have the messed up family, the Conners, all in the same house. Like, if you want to picture, what would happen if Al was to go, or, you know, if Roseanne was to go? Obviously, the only thing that would make sense is for Dan to fall in love with Peg Bundy, right? I get a kick out of the idea. I don't know if she's still on the show or not, but I didn't see her in this last episode. But love Katie Sagal anyway. I think she's very underrated for an actress. And I like everyone who's on the show. The Conners does a great job. John Goodman, what a legend he is. I'm wondering how things are for people like him to watch things change over the times. And I'm also curious how it is to work on a show like go from Roseanne back in the 90s when it was big and popular, 80s and the 90s when Roseanne was on in its prime, and now it's back again. And I'm wondering how it is for the people who work on the show now, who worked on it then, and watch how Hollywood television and whatnot has changed. I thought it was interesting that, you know, usually they do a live studio audience, and I know they obviously can't do that with, you know, the restrictions and stuff. I'm curious how that worked out. I'm going to guess they probably piped in the laugh tracks, which, like, the wrestling does now, which I can't stand in wrestling. But in a comedy show, that I don't mind that so much, since other shows have done that prior and it never bothered me. And I, quite frankly, I never needed a laugh track for a show anyway. If I found it funny, I'd laugh anyway. But yeah, love the sarcasm of the Connors. Darlene, who played by Sarah Gilbert. You know, I should try to get her on my show. Wouldn't that be interesting? I'd love to hear from a female perspective, for someone who has done a lot in film and television behind the scenes. And now I think she's taken over the reins over there. But I know Michael Fishman also has the same kind of credentials as far as that goes. I'm wondering how they work out the TV episodes, if they switch off directing the episodes. I got to ask him that. I can ask Michael that. Michael will answer that. But I'd love to get Darlene or Sarah Gilbert on the show to talk about that. Ames McNamara, who's been on our show, he's another individual whose appearance probably wouldn't even be possible if it wasn't for characters or people in the business like a Roseanne or a Murphy Brown, Candace Burton, for, you know, really breaking down those barriers for allowing such things to happen. Back in the 80s, they had a hard time with a lot of the things that they already pushed the envelope on. I think seeing characters like Ames McNamara's Mark is a sign that, hey, it's a different kind of a world and things are evolving. And I think it's good to see that people can stop being so judgmental and get outside their comfort zone and show people this is real life, people. Sometimes, and it's done a lot in the comedy fashion, but yeah, it's life. I am interested because I'm kind of curious, because I don't necessarily, the first couple episodes of The Connor, I might have to go back and watch the original Connor when they came back on, because I believe when they first started the character of Mark on, that's Ames McNamara's character, where he plays, like now he's playing, he's gay and he sometimes dresses flamboyantly. But in the early days of The Connors, when they came back and they introduced the character, I don't think he was necessarily gay as much as he just liked to dress up in alternate clothing. I think that was what the idea was, and that's why everyone was curious. But I don't think he was necessarily gay or straight in the original, and now all of a sudden he's gay. And I'm kind of wondering when that changed, because I have to do a little research on that myself now. So, give myself homework. And I know that's a very interesting, delicate thing, but it's something that wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for people like Roseanne, Murphy Brown, or any of these other people whose shows really broke down those barriers. Yeah, so that was kind of cool. I think it would be interesting to see what would happen if Ed O'Neill was to do a cameo on The Connors. Ed O'Neill, who still has the laugh factor, he just, of course, wrapped up working on Modern Family, which I haven't got a lot. I mean, I have watched Modern Family and I have a lot of respect for the Modern Family people and the cast, a fantastic group of people. And that's a great show, underrated and groundbreaking on for a long time. But when you have someone who's the legend holding the glue together like Ed O'Neill, you know why it works. Imagine if they were to move Ed O'Neill into the Connors house. Oh, what did that would money. Imagine. I don't want to spoil anything for people who didn't watch this week's episode of The Connors, but there's a character, Ben, who is dating Darlene. And this week's episode, you know, something happens that involves his mother coming back. And, you know, I think I can tell, I don't want to give away too much, but, you know, let's just say for the sake of argument, how interesting would it be if it was revealed that, you know, his dad may somehow be related to some guy, and it happens to be Ed O'Neill. Al Bundy, ladies and gentlemen, for lack of a better term, let's bring him on the show. So you have Ed O'Neill, Katie Sagal. Let's put it like this for those TV fans out there. You have Al Bundy, Peg Bundy, and Dan Connor and Darlene Connor on the same stage. How do you work that? And Murphy Brown. Oh, goodness me.
Then you throw in Aunt Jackie into the mix.
And then you can probably bring over Kelly Bundy, maybe. Christina Applegate, I think she'd be fantastic. I think she worked with Sarah Gilbert before, too. I think that would be an interesting mix. Or what about if they were to get Amanda Beers, who used to play Marcy on the Bundys? What if they were to bring her in this show and just combine all these old nostalgic 90s and 80s shows, which broke down the barriers of modern television and were controversial at the time? But nowadays, depending on what everything else is going on in the world, are probably very tame compared to what it is now. And whatnot. We've got about 13 minutes left of this episode of the TGIF4L Friday. And I hope you guys do have a good Friday. I'll be back for Talking Tuesday. Tuesday, we'll be bringing these people who are supposed to come in today. We'll probably open the airways for them to call then, so they can come on and do some chats and stuff like that for Talking Tuesday, open all, and have a smorgasbord of people, do a Q&A maybe and whatnot. I did want to mention and throw in here, the importance of, when I talk about watching things with my family and stuff like that, I think that's important to do. I think it's always important when you can to spend that time. Even if it's watching a movie or watching a television show or playing a board game, my wife and I believe in, spending as much time as we can with our kids. Our kids are older now. They're older teenagers. Most teenagers don't want to spend any time with their parents, which is okay. Our kids, we don't expect our kids to hang out with us all the time. They got their own friends, but I think it's always important. And we do make a habit as a family to get together and have those times where we can hang out and have dinner, lunch, breakfast, to have a game night. Our daughter's actually bringing us out on, we're actually having a double date this Sunday, apparently, with our daughter and her boyfriend. So that means I get to be the dad that gets to torment her boyfriend, like I always do. I love doing that, one of my favorite pastimes. But, that should be fun. But it's always good to spend time with our family like that. Imagine, looking back, watching my daughter grow up. And then my son also. And then here we are years later, we're going to go having a double date with our daughter and her boyfriend. Her boyfriend kind of looks like like Bob Ross. If Bob Ross and Disco Stu were to meet, that's kind of what her boyfriend looks like. Disco Stu from Simpsons. Bob Ross, of course, the legendary painter. I don't think any people who are into pop culture don't know who either one of those people are. At least Bob Ross, most people know. He's somehow became a thing again. But her boyfriend's a really cool guy. He's a really nice guy. He's really nice to her and whatnot. But I always, as the dad, it's always my job to torment him because that's what I got to do. To let him know that even though he's dating my daughter and he's a very nice guy, I like him a lot. My daughter is my daughter and, yeah, I'm one of those overprotective fathers who you never want to piss off, I'll tell you that much. My wife is just as vile as I am usually, but I'm the one who'll actually do it. my son, who's not ready for that yet, but he's much older in life. He's 18, my son. He's not really into that whole dating thing yet, which is okay. Take your time. But he has a very interesting outlook on anime and things like that. And one of these days, I'm going to bring him on here. Obviously, we work on Dream Masters together, too, and whatnot. But those people who listen to us do commentary during those shows, you probably know the banter that we usually get, which is usually entertaining for some parts. But I'm going to bring him on here when we talk about like anime stuff, because I don't really know much about that stuff as he does. And I also, with the anime stuff, I want him to tell you guys more about this JoJo adventure thing, where they have these, what they call stables, and I think you call them stables, but they have, they're based on old rock bands and music legends and stuff, and I'm going to have him come on here and talk about that, because what that's done for him is also, given him more music to check out. I thought that's kind of cool, how an anime thing can turn into something, experimenting with music outside their, they normally get to listen to. Because I remember when he first started watching the show, he'd ask me about, you know, Guns N' Roses, REO Speedwagon, and whatnot. Now, fun fact is we had our first family concert together. We had it during what me and my wife call our anniversary of when we met. We had a family, first my wife and I had a regular dinner for ourselves while our kids were at school. The second half was we actually had a family concert that we went to where we, and their first concert was REO Speedwagon. It was Night Ranger, REO Speedwagon, and that's right. It was Night Ranger, REO Speedwagon, Tesla, and Def Leppard as the headliner. And that was their first family concert. I remember we got comped. We got to the arena that I've been to many times before. It was an outdoor venue. And I've never been comped in that arena ever. But we got to the arena, and I guess they didn't have all the seats sold or whatever. So we lucked out, and we got to be like fifth row from the stage. And that was my family's first concert to see Def Leppard, Def Leppard, REO Speedwagon, and those other bands I mentioned, which are also, I'm not taking anything away from them. They're fun time too. But the fact that, you know, my son can say that he's actually heard REO Speedwagon, and he's also heard Def Leppard, who, you know, prior to that, he probably didn't know a lot of. remember, my kids aren't, you know, that old. But it's important that we have those things and, you know, those memories that we latch onto. And I'd like to, you know, say that I'm trying to get that done again. My son is not only fond of loud noises like pyrotechnics and stuff like that. When he heard, thanks to the show, when he heard about the concert that's supposed to happen, and I believe it's going to happen and we're going to be there, it's going to be Poison. It's Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Yeah, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Poison. Wait a minute. One more second. Yeah, I always get crazy. It's Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Poison, Def Leppard and Motley Crue with their return, their comeback. That's the show that I don't know why it took me so long to remember the lineup, but yeah. But even though my son's not really fond of loud noises and pyrotechnics, when he heard about this concert, thanks to the show, he was all in on that. Now he's older now too. But when he heard about all these groups that are based on his comic book thing, he wants to be there. So we're going to do that, and that's going to be really cool. Hope it's going to be fun anyway. I was actually at Motley Crue's retirement tour. What do they call that? Farewell tour. I was there for Motley Crue's farewell tour. They had Alice Cooper with them. I've seen all of those bands prior. I've seen Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. I've seen Def Leppard many times. I've seen Poison a couple times, usually with Def Leppard. And I have... yeah, that's a great lineup. And Motley Crue, of course. So that's going to be a good time. That's coming to my area. It's coming to a lot of areas. Hopefully it happens. And, you know, my kids are all going to be there, and I'm going to be there, and my wife. And that's going to be probably our next family concert. It's been a little while trying to get everyone into the same area. And there are some other shows we want to try to catch out to. If Jack and Tim ever come out here, the lucky ones, we'll go check them out. But in the meantime, there's many other groups and people and legends that we can check out and stuff who are going to be coming around. I know that we want to be good, you know, by Arsh and me, and also seeing them times we've been to see Healthy Dinner for a while. And I keep, you know, for some reason why a couple times, we're trying to get to go to see Weird Al Yankovic. I don't know, because I've seen them live. I have, but we're trying to work out something with time, because usually when we get busy, everyone's doing their thing. So, you know, I'm hoping when concerts start happening again and conventions start happening again, that, you know, people can do these things and whatever else they can do, you know. So that's the idea there. So 3 minutes, 4 minutes. It's been a show, let me tell you. But, you know, when I do those things, usually it's from, like, when I got to be a certain age, I decided that for people's birthdays or some type of anniversary or something special, I would usually bring them out for their birthday or for Christmas. Mostly like my brothers or a family member back in the day, I would bring them to a concert or a show of some kind, because rather than get them like a technical gift, like an inanimate object type of thing, because I feel like the memories you have at those shows are what will last in your memory for years. You'll always, you might lose whatever you get for your birthday or for Christmas or for the holiday, but the memory you have when you're there live and you got to say you saw Motley Crue, you saw Def Leppard, you know, you were there when Aerosmith did this, when Gene Simmons blew the fire off, when R.E.M. did his thing, you know, and, you know, when you can say that you've seen those things. But also, what if you would, like myself, I'm fortunate enough, I got to see legends like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. People won't forget it. Sadly, my kids never got to see Tom Petty, but they can hear about it. But I wouldn't have had that opportunity if I didn't go. And, you know, that's part of it too. But, you know, I brought my brothers to see Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. My brothers also went to see REM and a few other different people. And a lot of other people I brought in people to see. And those memories you have at those events will last in your head for various reasons. You know, whether it be something funny happened or the song or whatever, you'll always, whenever you hear that group or that song or the band, you'll always think back to when you had that event, which is why I feel like events are a better way to celebrate various ways to celebrate things, in my opinion, like instead of a gift. So we're wrapping things up, ladies and gentlemen, as we only have a few moments left. And fortunately, no one got in today. That's okay, though. We got more time, and Talking Tuesday will be back. And that's actually where Talking Tuesday gets this thing by people calling in. So hopefully we'll get them to call in on Tuesday. And to everyone out there, I hope you guys have a great weekend. Have a safe weekend. Have a fun weekend. Spend time with your family. Spend time with those you love and care about. And may all your dreams come true. Go check out my YouTube show to watch the results. And you know my email, Wild Dream Matches, wwdreammatches@gmail.com. And the guest call in line here is 516-453-9380. I am your host with the most, escorting you out of the F-World headquarters, the icon, Sean Jazz Stevens. Have a great weekend, everyone. May all your dreams come true. Peace.